Well, March 19th marked the first day of spring, at least according to the calendar. Has the weather been spring-like to you? Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Our weather guys are joining in once again. John Martin, professor and former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. And Steve Ackerman, vice chancellor for research and graduate education at UW-Madison. New title, we'll ask him about that. He's also a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. So we'll talk about all things spring today on the show. We'll also talk about if spring temperatures would have any impact on the COVID-19 outbreak, and talk about some fun ways you can monitor weather and even watch volcanoes from your computer, something to do while you're at home, away from work. Join in with your weather questions and observations. You can always email us photos at ideas@WPR.org, or you can send us questions at ideas@WPR.org. But also join in by phone, the number 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org. And, well, we got Steve Ackerman with us first here. Steve, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, yeah. It's been a great time to be here. Get back to something normal.
Well, I tell you what, you've got some things that are, I guess, sort of a new normal for you. You've got some professional news. You've accepted a new position. You'll be vice chancellor for research and grad education at UW-Madison. Congratulations for that.
And yeah, it's a fun job, although, you know, just as I take on the job, the COVID-19 hits. We have to deal with all those issues on campus. So.
Oh, yeah, that's not the best way to, I guess, to be starting out a new role. What's the role entail for you, really?
So what the position is that it oversees our research on campus and graduate education. So the dean of the graduate school actually reports to this vice chancellor position. And so we work closely with WARF in taking resources that are provided through their investment and through our patents, and we distribute it across campus, trying to support research and researchers as they conduct their research. So it's really generally a really fun job because a lot of times you're helping people research their, meet their research objectives, although this time of year when we're looking to close down a lot of work, it's not so much a fun job.
Yeah, I understand. And sometimes there's opportunities out of it. One of my colleagues in the Department of Life Sciences Communication has some funding coming in to do some research and communication activities that are taking place during this time, sort of some emergency funding, so it's great. Kai-Ping Chen from our department. So,
oh, right, yeah.
So anyway, the crux of this is that you're going to still stay with us, aren't you, with the weather?
Oh, yeah, I took this job on. It was a priority to come on Larry's show, no doubt.
Well,
it's too much fun not to do this and to, hear questions that come from the public and what the public's observing and what they think. That's a really big part of the Wisconsin idea, which is why we're all here.
Yeah, absolutely. John Martin, speaking of we're all here, John Martin's here as well. Hi, John.
Hey, Larry. How you doing? Hi, Steve.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Well, good. Hanging in there.
I'm really glad to know that you're with us, John, because you have consulted your Farmer's Almanac and have looked at the weather predictions for the upcoming season. It's been
you know, Larry, that in the face of all of the other emergencies, that the first thing I did was look at that Farmer's Almanac. You can bet that was what I did.
Well, it's you know, for the it's been kind of gloomy around the state, hasn't it? A little bit in recent weeks.
Yeah, I think it has. I think the weather has perfectly mirrored people's mood. Now today seems to be a nice exception, and it's you know, I think when the weather starts to get nice, it's going to be easier for people to deal with some of the challenges we've all been facing. But boy, last week was pretty darn gloomy way to start this whole thing out, I think.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It also helped, right? Because it was so gloomy, people did stay in their homes. You know, I worry a little bit as the sun gets out, a lot more people are going to be going out and, you know, risking interactions and contact.
Yeah, there's some truth to that. I was hoping that what people would do is just expand their giant picnic tables and sit 6 feet away from each other, but outside on the deck. And, you know, when the weather's nice.
Idea.
And it might have been sort of a blessing in disguise to have the first week so miserable that you didn't even think about it. And now you got to come up with some pretty reasonable strategies for how you might see each other, but at reasonable distances. So hopefully that'll work.
You know, we've been hearing a little bit about the COVID-19 outbreak in relation to spring. Do we know if the warmer temperatures will have any impact on the spread? Do we really know?
No, not. No, we really don't know. There hasn't been enough work. You know, we do know with viruses and the flu, and of course, COVID-19 is not the flu. Right, it causes a disease that has very different symptoms. We do know that influenza, the flu in general, does have a seasonal dependence and tends to, in the northern hemisphere, you know, as we go into the warmer, moister in terms of humidity season, the flu tends to drop down in the northern hemisphere. But of course, you know, in the southern hemisphere, they're going into winter, so. The seasonality, you know, kind of also flips between the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere in terms of the occurrence. But with this particular virus, I don't think we know enough yet to know what is going to happen. Sometime.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I wish we knew more, but we just don't seem to know that much about this thing. So, yeah, that's a...
You know,
tough position to be in.
Somebody else brought up it's shut down large cities. We're slowing down, not using our cars as much. You think there's any chance that this big change of pace could actually impact the atmosphere and the air quality in some places, at least?
I think I've already heard that some of the traces of carbon dioxide fraction have had noticeable bumps in them this last couple of weeks in the downward sense. So, they'll be temporary, most likely, but they probably will be measurable.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even a week or 2 weeks ago, they were looking at satellite imagery over China and could see the air quality clearly cleaning up some of the trace gases that are associated with industry and automobiles were certainly decreasing. And that's because people are staying home and not driving their cars. I mean, we're not driving our cars so much, my battery died.
Wow.
I've got a dead battery on my Prius at home as well. So,
yeah. Hey, Steve, that's what happens when you get an easy new job where you're not really working that hard.
You got nothing to do.
I know you've just been sitting around on your hands, you know, that kind of thing.
Man.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
All joking aside, listen, Steve, thank you and everybody else at the high levels in the university for making this transition palatable. You know, we're forced to do it, but you guys have worked tirelessly to make sure that we can do something that resembles what we usually do on campus, and that takes a lot of work. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Appreciate that, but, you know, I got to point out all the work you all who are teaching, like you, John, switching from face-to-face to online, I know, was a heroic undertaking. And congratulations on that, because it seems to be going pretty well.
Yeah, I was thinking about my uncle. I never thought I would have only 7 or 8 days to set my online course.
Yeah.
Having never taught an online course, it was quite a difficult Well, let's say it was gut-wrenching almost. I mean, it was very hard for all of us here, and as it is for everybody listening in, I'm sure it's been a very tough time for everybody. And then I'm thinking, what next? Now that we are coming into tornado season. That's all we need now. And we did have a tornado last night, I believe, in Palmyra.
Yeah, Dickeyville, I think it was. Yeah, it was way down southwest, yeah. Yeah, and there were several in Iowa, there were some in Illinois, and there were a couple in Arkansas. As you know, the Jonesboro one was pretty devastating. Nobody died, I don't think, in the entire outbreak. But it was a pretty devastating event and well predicted. I think we were talking about this on Friday at our electronic weather discussion. Alex Goldstein, who was a former PhD student of ours now working in Manhattan, was telling us about really excellent diagnosis of the event. And he was just about right on everything. So it was good.
Well, we're going to talk with these two characters about why the severe weather threat increases as now we've got spring and with summer approaching. We can talk with them a little bit about that. And we can also answer your weather and climate questions as well. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us your weather photos or your weather questions to ideas@WPR.org. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network, taking a look at climate and weather with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Wonderful to have them come by today. And certainly looking forward to your questions about weather and climate as we move along today. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@WPR.org. Sometime during this half hour, we're going to talk about some things you can do on the internet, like monitor earthquakes or look at volcanoes or parks through the camera. So those are things that the guys have ginned up for us as well as we move along today. And we were talking tornadoes just before we broke. And I know one of your weekly questions that I know the Wisconsin State Journal prints, questions from listeners to you about weather. Someone wondered, why does the severe weather threat increase as spring and summer approach?
Yeah, it's an interesting phenomena that goes on in the wintertime hemisphere, that the jet stream is really the boundary in the middle and upper troposphere. It's the boundary between cold polar air that's getting colder as the season wears on at high latitude and the residual warm air that still exists in the very far southern latitudes of the northern hemisphere, tropics and Florida, Arizona, places like that. And as the winter recedes and the spring begins, well, the cold air starts to shrink at high latitudes. And so the jet stream, which is at the boundary, the southern edge of that cold air, starts to move northward again. And it tends to, for reasons that aren't quite as obvious, tends to get a little more wavy. And so the flow can be perturbed in ways that is a little bit more uncharacteristic of the winter. But the big thing is the jet moves northward. And as it moves northward, it starts to sweep over the United States. First in the southern states in February and March, that's when the severe weather threat is biggest, in Mississippi, Alabama, places like that. Then by late March into early April, it's pretty serious in the south central United States, Oklahoma, Texas panhandles. And then by the time we get to late May to June and July, we're looking at the jet stream residing somewhere around the latitude of Madison or northern or central Wisconsin. And so the severe weather threat starts to move even further north. And so the tornado threat moves to the high plains and the northern plains by June and July. So it follows the jet stream. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it is.
So, John, I'm wondering, you were doing, you know, your research looking at the size of that and the edge of the cold pool and how that changes as springtime comes. Have you looked at that at all with tornadoes and where tornadoes are occurring and things?
No, it's a really good question. I haven't done that. And the reason, I think, is because the thresholds that I was interested in maybe don't really, it didn't strike me that they would be so directly related to where the jet is. I might have to go to a higher elevation to pay more attention to levels a little higher. But nonetheless, there should be some kind of relationship that would at least describe the poleward migration of the jet. And whether or not in certain Aprils, it's possible in the historic record that in certain Aprils, it's just been, you know, stubbornly cold over North America. And that undoubtedly has contributed to those Aprils being, you know, less tornadic. And then other Aprils and Mays maybe where, you know, there was an early resurgence of warm air from the south, and that probably opened the floodgates for a stormier season. So it's quite possible there's a connection there. I have not investigated that.
Yeah, interesting. Well, Steve Steele in Appleton has something for us. Let's go to Steele. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hey, gentlemen and everyone about inside, outside. I'm in the sun right now. But last night I was perusing through the internet and an article about they're seeing the ozone depletion getting better. And so they had mentioned, you know, how it can alter jet streams and stuff. They're just wondering. And then they said, well, it'll be, you know, another 20 years for in the tropics where the ozone, but maybe a little quicker on the poles. And then today I saw a lone pelican, first one of the year. And so I asked my, I told my neighbor, and I said, and she said, well, they must be social distance.
Oh, good one, Steele. I like that. A little social distancing going on among the pelicans. But what about this? What about his comments relating to ozone and weather?
Yeah, so the ozone hole over the Antarctic, which again, of course, is not a hole. It's related to the total concentration in the atmosphere above the Arctic, how much ozone is up there in the stratosphere. Has been improving over the last few years in particular. And a lot of this is, of course, due to treaties and protocols about CFCs, which we know were having a negative impact on the amount of ozone up in the stratosphere. And it's important that it's up in the stratosphere because there it protects from ultraviolet radiation reaching the surface. So it is getting better over Antarctica. It just so happens, I saw an article come across my email about an ozone depletion over the Arctic, so over the Northern Hemisphere. I haven't read it yet, but that doesn't occur that often. So I'm kind of curious to get back to that to see what it is. One of the things we have observed, and this goes for the Antarctic as well, is that the ozone concentration is also a function of the stratospheric temperature. And so that impacts the concentration as well. So maybe that was happening in the Arctic recently. So kind of curious to see what that is. But yeah, in general, the ozone depletion over the Southern Hemisphere Antarctic has been getting better.
Steele, thank you so much. Let's go to Shannon in Iron Mountain, Michigan. Hi, Shannon.
Hi. I have a question about a guest that you had on earlier this year. It was weather-related. It was he had said that for every 15 minutes, it is like a day difference in climate, is what I believe he said. And I think he said for every 15 minutes, not 15 degrees. As far as maybe, you know, latitude or longitude. So I'm wondering if you are familiar with that, remember that, or if you can explain that to me.
I've not heard that. I'm trying to put it together. Maybe it means 15 minutes of latitude. So
yeah, I think that's what it means.
Yeah, so for I guess maybe this is what the person meant, and I don't know for sure, but it could be that if you look at what latitude you happen to be at today, then for every, let's say that your winter usually begins on November 15th, that and it does usually in Madison by a couple of different measures. And then that was 50 years ago. Now winter might begin at a place where 50 years ago, you know, you were several degrees farther south or something like that. So maybe like Champaign, Illinois. And so you're trying to make a translation in terms of the day in the calendar to exactly what former latitude used to have weather that you now have on that day of the calendar. So I wonder if that isn't it, but I don't know.
I think that's it. I
would think that that's it as well. And, you know, because I'm thinking they're making comparisons with, like, Madison's weather in the year 2050 will be like what it is in Missouri or something like that.
Yeah.
There we go, Shannon. That's what we got for you. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Mary Kay in Kenosha has something for us. Hi, Mary Kay.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. I have to ask a question about cleaning the air. If we had HEPA machines in our homes and businesses, you know, installed in our businesses, would that help clear the virus away, slow it down? The same thing if we went to the grocery store with gloves and a mask, and if we restricted travel for a month for visiting us, region by region, would that slow the virus?
Well, I think the restrictions on travel certainly will help. I'm not an expert on, even close to an expert on this. I don't know any more than my cat about some of these questions. But it seems to me that what I have heard is that this disease is not just transmitted in the air, except in so far as it might be carried in respiratory droplets that evaporate. And then for a short distance beyond where they evaporate, there may be a chance that you can inhale it into your own system. But by and large, it's through contact with mucous membranes, and that's going to require that the virus makes contact with some of your own liquid surfaces in your eyes and your nasal passages in your mouth. Otherwise, you don't run very much of a risk of contracting it. I don't know if that's 100% accurate.
I think that's pretty close. Mary Kay, does that answer your question?
Yes, but again, if you went to the grocery store with the gloves and the mask, wouldn't that help a lot too?
Oh, yeah, I think it does. I think it does a lot, I think, for sure. So that's the operating way that we're working in my house. We try and make quick, almost surgical strikes at the grocery store, get in and out as quick as possible, no regular shopping and deliberating about which, you know, thing of Brussels sprouts or which can, and then just get out of there. But by taking those precautions, I think you're right, that you minimize your risk.
Yeah. Thanks, Mary Kay. Appreciate it. Greg in Waukesha up next. Hi, Greg.
Good morning. Good afternoon. This question came up that after 9/11, there was an immediate drop in worldwide air traffic, jet traffic, and that people attributed a drop in atmospheric temperature over just a two-week period to that. And that's the temperature probably in the 30,000 to 10,000 foot range in our atmosphere. Is that true, or is that just an urban myth? Thank you.
Yeah. Steve, what do you...
Yeah, there was a study that looked at that from a faculty down in Whitewater, and I'm forgetting his name at the moment, but maybe it'll come to me by the end. They saw a drop in air temperatures over regions where there was a lot of air traffic going on, like in the Chicago areas and things like that. So, that same question has been popping up with regard to this event. Again, we know that air travel is dropping down, and it's probably going to be last even longer than what 9/11 did. And so with human activity really dropping down, we're seeing a variety of impacts. One is less air traffic, so less contrails, which was the primary attribution, if you will, to the change in the surface temperature or the air temperature down near the surface. And we're certainly seeing, as we were saying earlier, air quality improvements. I have heard that the water quality around Venice has also gotten better. So I think we're seeing a lot of impact, local impact, as people, secure and stay at home. So I think it would be an interesting study going forward. I think the big question will be, any results that we find, will there be statistical significance to it, which is something we always want to have better conclusions.
Greg, thank you so much. Let's go to Dale in Appleton next. Dale, hello.
Hi there. Back in about 2006, in the summer, I was woken up by an incredibly loud clap of thunder, roaring, booming thunder. And I just thought, wow, that seemed to be the loudest thing I'd ever heard. And I found out the next morning that about 6 miles away in New London, Wisconsin, that thunder had caused damage to homes, you know, not the lightning strike, but that percussion, you know, the sound actually broke windows, it damaged door frames, you know, things like that. Have you ever heard of that?
Wow.
I had never heard of that before, but, you know, you can feel your own body shake when a really loud clap of thunder occurs. So it's not, you know, it's really not a change in kind, but a change in degree of the kind of damage or the kind of structural impact that you could imagine from one really extraordinarily close clap of thunder. That's amazing. What a
yeah.
story.
What is the how does that all happen? Can you, John, the sound that comes there with the lightning?
Well, when there's a discharge, electrical discharge that manifests itself as the lightning stroke, then that air gets superheated to something. What is it, Steve? Something like 10,000 degrees or some ridiculous number like that?
It's five times the temperature of the surface of the sun.
Wow.
Yeah, so 30,000 degrees Kelvin. So it's way, way up there. And so that makes the air extraordinarily expand rapidly right in that channel. But it doesn't last long, as you know, because the flash is only momentary. And then the adjacent air masses that have not undergone such heating and expansion slam back together again once the channel is devoid of the charge. And so that's what sends out the sound waves. And if it's right overhead, of course, then you're going to get unmitigated sound waves of the kind just described by the caller, which could very definitely do damage to structures. I've not ever witnessed it myself, but I have no doubt at all that that kind of thing can happen occasionally. So it sounds like it did in this instance.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks, Dale. Appreciate it. I had not heard that, or if I had, I'd forgotten about it. It was very interesting. Thank you. Ketzel in Bayfield, your turn. Hi.
Hey, guys. I'm from Bayfield. Hi, Professor Martin. I just had a quick comment and question for you guys. The first is in regards to one of the previous callers was talking about how to make trips to the grocery store safely right now.
Yeah.
And I heard, or I guess, I'm not sure where I picked this up. I think he was on NPR somewhere, that one of the best ways to get in and out of the grocery store safely is with the help of a lot of hand sanitizer. So making sure that you carry some hand sanitizer with you, and then once you've gone through the grocery store, you've picked up everything. Obviously, you've been touching a lot of surfaces. To make sure that you sanitize your hands and maybe your bag handle before you get back in your car. And then that stops the spread of anything that you've touched, you know, going on to your car steering wheel or the handle of your car, something like that. And if you do want to wear gloves, to make sure that you're not wearing them to, like, multiple locations. So if you were to put on gloves and go to the pharmacy and then go to the grocery store with the same gloves, it's no different than touching everything with your hands. You've now just spread things via the surface of your gloves.
Yeah.
So just making sure that you take those precautions. And then as far as some weather goes, I'm sitting up here in beautiful Bayfield, Wisconsin, where we still have at least 2 feet of snow on the ground.
And
lucky you.
Our robins started showing up a week or so ago. And I heard that there's a saying that once the robins show up, there's still 3 more snows to go. and so we've had
you got to run that through the Bayfield Duluth filter, which means, you know, you only get 1 weekend of summer. So there's that kind of problem, too, that you got to do the translation part.
Well, you know, with climate change, we might get 2.
Yeah.
But we've had 2 snows now, especially with the big system that rolled through. Over the last couple of days, we got a lot of rain, but we also got a fair amount of snow. And I was just wondering if anybody has any predictions for how many more snows we might get.
That's a good question. I don't have one at all. I suspect, though, that the threat doesn't really, and you can back me up, Ketzel, you've lived there a long time. I would suspect the threat doesn't really disappear until mid-April at the earliest, and I'm probably even later than that up in Bayfield and Duluth area. Is that about right?
I would probably agree with you. I think a lot of other people would. There's a lot of seasons where we still see snow on the ground in April and late April, and I've seen snow on the ground in early May as well. Hmm. Our last frost, on average, isn't usually until, like, May 30th.
Wow. Last Memorial Day weekend. That's brutal.
You know, I've skied in early May, so...
You know, the correlation between snowfall and robin appearance sounds like a Farmer's Almanac prediction. Maybe you want to
it strikes
to that.
Me as that, yeah. Roll the chicken bones and hope for the best. Yeah.
Robin bones, I think.
Ketzel, thank you so much. It was you gave us some good information about shopping, and it was fun to talk about robins with you as well.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
One other thing I heard about shopping is that some people, when they come back, you know, if the food is in cans or in boxes, they're putting it in their basement or their garage for 24, 48 hours because there's research showing that the life of the virus is a function of how long of time. And so they're just, you know, not touching it once they bring it home.
Yeah.
Thinking that the virus may disintegrate by then.
And
we've been kind of washing everything off the surfaces of boxes and cans and so on with, you know, this disinfectant stuff, too. So that's another option. But we've done both. We've quarantined things in the garage and then we've wiped them off. So trying to do the right thing.
And back to Bayfield for just a second with Ketzel. Jill reminds me that we had snow last year for Bayfield and Bloom when we were up there in May, which would have been around May 9th or 10th.
Unbelievable.
We had the snow. Well, here we are.
I bet there's at least one more snowfall up there.
There's no doubt. No doubt
about that, Ketzel. Oh, man. You know, here we are running out of time. You know, we have... some links to a list at WPR.org/Larry. So if you want to know where you can monitor earthquakes, the USGA earthquake page, there are dozens of earthquakes a day. There's volcano webcams. We can monitor volcano activity from our homes. Yellowstone National Park has a camera on their geysers and even on Old Faithful. And NASA Worldview lets us look at the Earth from satellites. And all that is on our – just go to WPR.org/Larry and you'll get some more information on that. Oh, man. Steve, John, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. We'll look forward to hopefully things will be a little better at the end of next month.
We want to get to your Larry studio. We want to get in your new studio.
Yeah,
right?
We're
never going to get in the new studio.
It'll happen. John Martin, professor, and Steve Ackerman, also a professor, and he's vice chancellor for research and grad education at UW-Madison as well. They'll be back the end of next month, and we'll do it all over again. Just a reminder, if you missed part of our show or just want to hear it again, you can always go to our archives at WPR.org/Larry. Tomorrow at this time, we'll hear from the producer of a new PBS Wisconsin program featuring three high school a cappella programs in the state. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.